Today is May 19th, 2021. Can't believe it's May already. This is episode number 547 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, sometimes nominating, but rarely validating. And that might make sense a little later in this episode. But to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you straight to our Facebook group. Today, again, May 19th for those keeping score at home, I am joined by my longtime business partner and fellow co-publisher of the Mac Observer, one Dave Hamilton. Dave?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on the show again, man. Fun stuff.
Yeah, it's been too long, I would say. Oh, Dave, later in this very same episode, I'm going to tell you all about saving some money on a molecule air purifier.
Nice.
Yeah, bated breath, right?
Bated breath, and even if my breath is bad, maybe it'll purify that out of the air.
It's the other form.
That's the other form of baited. Yes. That's correct.
Yeah. That is so foul. I've never heard that joke. Have you used that before?
No. Okay. This would be the first time.
All right. Yeah. Sweet. All right. Well, we're going to do another first on this particular episode because we're going to talk about proof of work and proof of stake and energy consumption.
You mean cryptocurrency?
Yes, all related to cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I have questions, and I'm hoping you have some answers for me.
I do, probably.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, cryptocurrency, as I understand it, you are the one who taught me about cryptocurrency early on, and you've continued to help increase my knowledge about crypto throughout.
You were mining Bitcoin way before I got into it.
Oh, is that right? Well, yeah. I had no idea what I was doing. Maybe let's. I didn't realize that. I thought somehow you had told me to do this. But yeah, I guess it started with things like SETI at home, where you could use your computer's background cycles to help like search for aliens and things like that. And then there was an app called Mac Miner where you could join a mining pool and use your Mac to, you know, mine Bitcoin. And in the course of one summer, I mined, I don't know, it was over a Bitcoin, right? I mean, this was back when Bitcoin was worth like, you know, maybe $30.
Right.
Like, it might have even been way before that.
Right.
But and then suddenly I couldn't anymore. And I asked you because I think you were sort of involved in this, like, and I asked you, I'm like, well, you know, over the course of a month or two, I earned one Bitcoin from my mining power contributions. And now in the last month, I've earned zero and it looks like it's broken. And you said, oh, a month ago, the new hardware, the super hoopty GPU mining boxes were finally shipped. So, yeah, don't waste your time anymore. That'll never happen again. And that sort of leads us to where we are today because of what Bitcoin is with, as I understand it, what they call proof of work versus other types of cryptocurrency, which are proof of stake. And the only thing I understand is that proof of work has potentially enormous energy requirements and proof of stake has sort of more managed and far lower energy requirements. And that seems relevant today, although I still feel like it's more relevant to me, whatever it was 8 years ago when I could actually mine Bitcoin on my computer. Maybe it's time to learn.
To sort of clarify this too, we were both mining Bitcoin independently, but you started before me and you started when you could do it with your computer. And then I started when the ASICs first appeared.
Ah, right.
And,
okay.
And you specifically told me, don't bother trying to mine with your Mac.
Ah, okay. And then you told me why I shouldn't bother to mind my Mac. Correct. So I didn't realize that. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Yeah. We learn about each other's history and our own at the same time.
At the same exact time. So, so all right, let's, but part of why this topic came up for you and me to discuss is because Elon Musk announced via tweet that Tesla would no longer accept Bitcoin as payment. And that it was because he was concerned about the massive energy requirements for mining Bitcoin. And a lot of that energy is coming from very dirty coal in China.
Yeah, well, they build those Bitcoin mining farms right next to the coal factory, so they get the lowest priced energy possible, because energy apparently matters.
It does. And some of them are actually next to hydroelectric dams.
Fine. That's just nitpicking, though.
But this is just nitpicking, because a lot of it is dirty coal power.
Me and our listeners why this matters and what the difference is here between proof of work and proof of stake, so that we understand why so much energy is required to mine Bitcoin and very little by comparison, like fractions of a percent are required to mine a different type of cryptocurrency based on proof of stake, like Cardano.
The dogs are going to have something to say about that. Okay. We'll cut that out in a second. Yeah, I got it. Thank you, Eve. Stop, please. Come, Eve. Okay, we're good.
So you say.
Yeah, okay, well, that is, and that is does, I guess, cut to the heart of it. So, Ichabod. That does cut to the heart of it, Dave. Proof of work, what that simply means is that it's when a blockchain technology is pitting computer users, computer owners against each other to validate the encryption, to ensure that people are who they say they are, or that wallets are who they say they are, and that a cryptocurrency is being sent from one wallet to another wallet, and that everything is on the up and up. And it pits different computers against each other, and it uses a reward system that encourages people to apply more computing power to that process.
So break this down for me. Let's say you and I are the only ones mining Bitcoin today, right? And so, like, what is my computer doing? What is your computer doing? I don't mean at like a very basic level, but, you know, 10,000 foot view. What are our computers doing? And why would you having more processing power than me help you?
That's a great question. I don't think I've heard it put that way either. So it's just you and me alone in the world mining Davecoin.
Sure.
Okay.
But I want to say Bitcoin because I don't want to confuse people what Davecoin is. We don't know what that is, right? So let's talk about it with Bitcoin, but it's just you and me. All the rest of the miners shut down for this period of the show.
Period of the show. That's great. So our computers are checking encryption, like literally just making sure that everything adds up.
By just doing complex math.
And that math has been essentially established by the blockchain protocol, Bitcoin in this case.
Okay, sure. But sure, of course.
So the in that both of our computers are speaking Bitcoin to each other, they're both agreeing on those rules. And those rules say that we have to solve encryption, and that encryption has been set artificially at this difficulty level.
Ah, so as more people join, the difficulty level will be set artificially higher.
Correct. And
okay,
every blockchain does that a little bit differently.
Sure, but I'm just 10,000 feet. So, okay, so it's when it's just you and me, we actually would have just solved all of Bitcoin's problems, at least the symptoms of the problems, by taking everybody else out of the equation, because by and large, the difficulty would drop down if it were just you and me doing this mining, right? But there's Bitcoin in it, so other people want in, and other people are in, and now the difficulty of that encryption calculation goes up because there's more people involved, and that requires more, that encourages people to apply more power to their computers so that their computers can do this operation faster.
Right. And
why does it matter if more than one person does this encryption math?
Well, hidden in this math are things called blocks, which are records of transactions. And whenever a miner, that's someone whose computer is doing this math,
that's you and me at this point,
right? When one of us finds a block, the Bitcoin protocol releases free Bitcoin to our account. Just send
it to us. But why? So what I guess the part that I've never, thank you, because this, I think we've distilled it down. What I've never understood is, we're both doing the same math. All computers do math the same way. Why would your computer stumble on this hidden block and mine wouldn't if we're literally doing the same math?
Because it is stuck in there by the protocol and we don't know where it is. So we have
our computers are picking which encrypted fragments to run our math on, and we might not pick the right one.
Correct. Because we don't know what the right one is.
That's what I mean. We don't know. Yes, right. We don't know. So this is why the power is super important, because if I can do more blocks every, let's say, 15 minutes, then I have a greater chance of stumbling onto the block. I have a greater chance of stumbling onto the math, the fragment that might have that block in it.
Correct. And okay,
you could also find it with your slower computer, even though I'm mixing our metaphors here, because your computer has been faster in every other one of my calculations, except the one that finds the block. But the slower computer could just get lucky and pick the right fragment to analyze and find the block. There's no guarantee. It's just a numbers game. The more fragments you can process, the more encryption calculations you can process over a given period of time, the greater chance you have of finding the block.
Correct. And there's another big missing element here. And that is that to keep things going, the protocol was designed around the idea of blocks being found on average every 10 minutes.
Right.
So if the difficulty level was set at a rate right now, it's just you and me, and yep, it's set at a rate for our computers to randomly find on average a new block every 10 minutes. If you throw another computer in, so like, you know,
our listener's computer, right? Yep.
They come in, so now there's three computers doing the same math at the same level of difficulty. That's 50% more computing power, so you're going to be having blocks found, what, every six minutes and
40
seconds?
Yeah, so we need to raise the difficulty so that we stay with that 10-minute average.
Right.
Got it. Okay, so now if I'm following along properly, that is proof of work. And yes, that's what Bitcoin does. And there's other cryptocurrencies that also do proof of work. But that's the problem that Elon Musk has recently and famously pointed to, saying, hey, this, like, it's only going to get worse because, you know, we all want to find those blocks and get free Bitcoin deposited into our accounts. Thank you very much.
Right.
Got it.
And
so now, more now Bitcoin, I want to know what proof of stake is.
Well, and the more Bitcoin is worth, the more it is worth you and me and our listeners maybe buying more computers.
That's the problem.
And throwing at it. So this is ever escalating a battle of the computers. And it turns out that those computers need power.
Ever escalating as long as the day is not May 19th, 2021, when the price of Bitcoin and every other crypto is tumbling off of a cliff. But I get your point. And today, crypto is a naturally, or at least historically, very volatile investment, if you think of it that way. And so its value related to, say, the U.S. dollar, it changes with great fluidity. And today that fluidity is like a bloodbath.
But, yeah.
You know, yeah, it happens.
Somewhat elastic today. And I would like to point out that I have a little Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I have a little Cardano. We are not offering any investment advice.
Right. No, but we were explaining, like, I'm learning a ton here about, I mean, I've known sort of this, if we're saying this is the 10,000 foot view, I've known this from the 100,000 foot view for the last, whatever, 10 years. This makes more sense to me now. So this is great. But now I want to learn about what's better, unless you have something else you need to tell me about.
Better. I think it's better. Better so far.
Well, it's more power efficient. Let's classify what the word better might mean in my question. So I want to learn about this proof of stake thing that's more power efficient. But is it time for you to tell me about our sponsor?
Sure. Why not? Let me tell you about Molecule. Long-term listeners know that I have been a Molecule air purifier customer ever since I moved into the place I'm living now. I bought two of them. I was very concerned about air quality because we were dealing with fires in the state of California. And of course, summer's coming up now. It could be fire season again. I'm hoping we fare better this year, but I am super excited about having my Molecule air purifiers in my home. Molecule air purifiers destroy the widest range of pollutants compared to traditional air purifiers, including viruses, bacteria, mold, allergens, and chemicals in the air. Molecule air is designed for large rooms up to 600 square feet. Molecule air mini is designed for small rooms up to 250 square feet. Molecule air mini plus helps protect small rooms with a particle sensor and auto protect mode, which adjusts fan speed based on the sensor. Then there's Molecule Air Pro. It's designed for extra large rooms up to 1,000 square feet. And then Molecule Air Pro RX received 510K Class 2 medical device clearance for medical purposes to destroy bacteria and viruses in the air. And then, of course, this is very important, Molecule's technology has been verified with rigorous testing from independent third-party labs. And of course, I love my Molecules. Definitely good to have if you're concerned about air quality. And here is the thing, because you were listening to ACM, you can save up to $120 on Molecule air purifiers by visiting molecule.com, and that's molekule.com, and using promo code ACM. That's for this podcast. You can enjoy free shipping and a 30-day at-home trial on your order. And again, that's code ACM at molecule.com to save up to $120 on Molecule air purifiers. Good stuff. Okay, Dave, so looking now at proof of stake. Proof of stake is a completely different concept. And with proof of stake, the network that is governing a particular crypto is not making it a free-for-all for anybody and their brother to throw their computer at solving the math. And instead, the network assigns control of that math to individual stakeholders, which
one at a time,
And they all do it a little bit differently. And the one I know the most about is Cardano.
So let's use Cardano as an example, but it's okay. So instead of it being all of us, any of us really is the right way to look at it with proof of work, AKA what Bitcoin does, where everyone would be trying to do the math at every second.
And sometimes actually people doing the same math unnecessarily. Because if you and I are both working on the same problem, but only I find the block, it's really only my work that counts.
Right. Whoever finishes that problem first, the magic problem, you know, that has the hidden block in it, that's the only one that matters. Everybody else, it's like sperm to the egg, man. You know, you get there first,
just
you're done.
Like that, Dave. It's precisely like that.
That's ridiculously inefficient, right? Much better this thing you're describing, where the network picks who gets to do this math right now, and then picks who gets to do the next math.
But the problem, there are potential problems there, because you want the part of the
who gets to pick
thing. Yeah. Who gets to pick? Part of the whole thing about cryptocurrency is having everything be decentralized, so that it's a trustless system.
I don't
vital.
Need to worry. That's right. I don't have to put trust into it as long as I trust the way the system was built.
Right. So, for instance, looking at the proof of work systems, there's nothing stopping someone from throwing their computers at it by design. But the problem that comes along with that is the escalation that we've already talked about, the inflation, sure. The computing inflation. When you have a proof of war, of stake system, now you have to worry about how those controllers are being selected. And like I say, different proof of stake systems approach all of this differently. The one I know the most about is Cardano. So we're really talking about Cardano here. And hopefully I'm not even going to get any of it wrong. Because that remains to be seen, but we're going to try that. So I have an analogy that I've been using to try to explain proof of stake on the Cardano network to people. Ready?
Yes.
Okay. No. So the proof of stake protocol is that the network itself is represented, in my analogy, by an auctioneer who's standing up on stage next to a giant fishbowl. And in front of the auctioneer are people who own Cardano, and only people who own Cardano. And each one of those people is saying, I'm here ready to do my job of running this math for a predetermined amount of time. And the auctioneer is looking out at this audience and saying, who's got some Cardano? And so person number one raises her hand and says, I've got 1,000,000 Cardano. And so the auctioneer takes a piece of paper and writes, you know, Cardano holder number one 1,000,000 times on, or at least writes her name down on 1,000,000 pieces of paper and puts them in the fishbowl.
Right.
And then the auctioneer says, who else has got some Cardano? And someone else says, well, I've got 100,000 Cardano. So the auctioneer takes that person's name, puts it on 100,000 pieces of paper. So now in the fishbowl, there's 1,100,000 pieces of paper. One of them's got stakeholder number one, and one of them's got stakeholder number two. Now, obviously, stakeholder number one has a better chance of having her name drawn than stakeholder number two.
So this isn't an auction as much as it's a raffle. Like, you're going to spin the fishbowl and you're just pulling a number out. It could be person number two, but chances are it's going to be person number one that gets selected to do that little bit of math, of encryption math.
Right. That is that is a fantastic correction to my analogy.
No, this makes it, you need to have somebody up there, and having an auctioneer really makes it work because they talk fast and they really keep you excited.
The raffle master.
It's the raffle master. Does the raffle master know the conger eel, or am I really mixing history here?
Really mixing up some things there. So
that was the drawling. The drawling master knows the conger eel. Sorry, I'll get it right.
The raffle master is asking all of the stakeholders who wants to put their Cardano up as a stake to vie for the right to control the network for a predetermined amount of time. Now,
so there's only ever one person, one computer, one stakeholder doing the math at any given point in time. And this is predetermined, that the process that you're talking about, this raffle by auctioneer process, is predetermined as part of the foundation of what Cardano is built upon.
Yes.
That sounds way more efficient.
It is. Well, it's way more efficient in terms of computing power. In some ways, it's a lot messier because now you've got, for instance, the Cardano world is divided into 5-day epochs. And each one of those epochs is divided into 432,000 slots that last only a couple seconds.
Okay, so the raffle master pulls the number out of the fishbowl and says, okay, it's person number 14, because presumably there's more people standing there other than one or two.
Yes.
And now person number 14 for this couple of seconds, this one of 432,000th of the slice, they get to do their math and try their hand at the, you know, the roulette wheel, if you will. And, oh, you didn't get it. Okay, we're going to pull another number out of the hat, out of the fishbowl.
But the math that person did while they controlled that slot still matters, because that's still validating the various transactions that have been performed. So that's not not wasted work. They just didn't get rewarded for it.
The miners are not only mining in hopes of getting a reward, either the Bitcoin reward or the Cardano reward, but they also are confirming the transactions that happen across the entire blockchain. In fact, that's the whole point of this, isn't it?
That is the entire point of both proof of work and proof of stake.
Right, because you need to, because if I send you Bitcoin right now, it's not good enough that you and I agree that I've sent you Bitcoin. We need the entire blockchain to agree that I've sent you Bitcoin. And that way there's no way a week from now I can say, I never sent Brian Bitcoin.
Yeah. Or,
you know, like, well,
you can send it again.
I heard it on a podcast, or I could try sending it to somebody else. Right. Exactly. It's because the blockchain tracks that very specifically. Every little coin, every little slice of every little coin is tracked by the blockchain, and it only will ever be agreed to be in one wallet at a time.
Right. And, you know, credit cards do the same thing, but they do it vastly differently.
Well, they have a single point of failure in terms of clearinghouses.
And it's not just single point of failure. It's also single point of trust.
Single point of control, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not a trustless system at all. And being trustless, that doesn't get talked a lot these days when it comes to cryptocurrency, but the goal of being trustless is a big part of the concept of cryptocurrency in the first place.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. You and I don't have to trust each other,
or anyone else
to send you Bitcoin. I just send it to an address that you tell me to send it to, and hopefully you don't get it wrong. And hopefully I don't get it wrong. And then the system, by way of these mining operations, will confirm that I have sent that to you. And then that's it. There's no more.
You can't take it back. And no backseats. I can't claim that you didn't send it.
That's right. Yeah. Neither one of us needs to trust the other. Okay. So I have a question about this proof of stake thing, because what you said was person number one is pledging a million Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Person number one is pledging 1 million Cardano in order to have the opportunity to have their number selected from the fishbowl. Mm-hmm. Person number two, 100,000 Cardano, et cetera, et cetera. Are they risking that 1 million Cardano, that 100,000 Cardano? Is there a risk involved in this or no?
Not with Cardano. Cardano was set up. I love Cardano, by the way. I'm a huge fan of Cardano. And one of the things they do is that everything goes through an academic peer review process, unlike essentially every other cryptocurrency out there. And it makes it a little slower to get things developed, but it also kind of means that once something hits the ground, it hits the ground running. And built into the protocol is the ability to run a staking pool to vie for the opportunity to run these slots. And even better, I can I can pledge my Cardano to one of these staking pools without that Cardano ever leaving my wallet, because it's built into the protocol. The wallet allows me to pledge my Cardano to a staking pool. The staking pool can then turn around and say, "Hey, look, I've got my million, but I've also, you know, I've got the 1,000 Cardano that this other guy owns too. So I've got a million and 1,000 Cardano." Right? And then so like all Cardano holders who are using, at least there's two wallets that support this, they can all pledge their Cardano. It never leaves their control, and they can even spend it. And once they spend it, of course, they won't get any rewards.
The numbers that, yeah, if they pull the number based on the, you know, if you pledged your 1,000 Cardano and you spent blocks 1 through 10 of that, and blocks, I'm using the wrong word, but, you know, you pledge Cardano 1 through 10 of that, and they pull the number out of the fishbowl that says, "Oh, so you person number 14 with your 1,000 Cardano, we just pulled the number of Cardano, you know, number 3 out of your thing." You have to say, "Well, I don't have that anymore. I can't. I'm not allowed to do the math."
Yeah, well, yeah, and the protocol actually
knows to just skip you.
No, yeah. Knows to skip that, you know, to not count those.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, so that's what pledging means, is that you're not promising that you'll have it, but you're saying, if I still have this, I would like the opportunity to do the work if that number comes up in the fishbowl.
Right.
This makes perfect sense to me. I have been completely flabbergasted by this whole proof of stake thing until this very moment. And so now I'm going to pledge my Cardano, because I have a little bit of Cardano too, because you convinced me to go get some. And you're welcome. And its value is tumbling along with everything else. So it's outstanding. Thanks. Yeah, no, it's good. As of today, Cardano is Cardano is down, I think, percentage wise, double what Bitcoin is down. So that's cool.
No, it was actually holding its value relative to Bitcoin.
Not what Coinbase was saying before I joined the thing. Cardano, they're saying, is down 16% today. Bitcoin is down 8. Huh. So literally double. Yeah. So thank you. That's great. But maybe now I can stake my Cardano and maybe have a chance of, the system might cough up some back to me. So maybe it works out.
So the reward for doing this are newly released Cardano. The reward for finding a block in Bitcoin is newly minted Bitcoin. Sure. And with Cardano, for whatever it's worth, all the Cardano were created at the very beginning and are essentially owned by the company, and billions are left under the control of the company to reward stakeholders.
Could the company that started Cardano decide to stop releasing them, or is that process simply built in and they are the ones that have actually pledged things and it's not at risk, but it's gonna flow out no matter what they decide to do?
Well, that's actually one of the beauties of Cardano. Changes to the protocol are decided by stakeholders, i.e. people who own Cardano. Changes to Bitcoin are decided by the miners. Which is why Bitcoin hasn't been fixed, because the people that own football field size warehouses in China full of computers doing Bitcoin math have a vested interest in making sure that the network still needs those football field size warehouses full of computers.
I got you. Sure, right? Of course. Right. I've invested in this. There's no way that I'm going to let you step in and change the rules on me.
Right.
It's like the legal field. If you want to be an attorney, technically, did you know that you don't have to go to law school? You could do what's called reading the law and study as an apprentice under an existing attorney, and they can sponsor you for the bar. And as long as you can learn enough to pass the bar, well, then you're an attorney. But because every attorney that's out there went to law school, they are not going to sponsor you. So technically reading the law is still allowed in several states, but it ain't going to happen but it doesn't happen. So, okay. And this is why it's a terrible analogy, because most people don't know that little bit of trivia, but it is an analogy nonetheless. Sorry.
Right. And so the company, the Bitcoin that I mentioned is actually held by the Cardano Treasury, which is controlled by the company, but it's everything is set in stone and until the protocol is changed. So it means that people who own Cardano are the people who would change the rules governing Cardano. It's another reason why I like it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. This makes sense to me. Thank you. That's awesome.
So today, related to this, someone put out, Coinbase had a link to this article. There was someone who did their own independent analysis who said that Ethereum 2.0, which is a long, long, long awaited update to the Ethereum blockchain,
yep,
would consume 99.95% less energy than the way it currently works, because Ethereum is a proof of work system and Ethereum 2.0 would be a proof of stake system.
Aha. Okay. And now I understand what that means and why that matters. Like that little bit of news means something to me now.
Oh, good.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah. Another little bit of news.
Yeah.
In 2019, Kim Kardashian announced that she was reading the law in California, one of the few states where that's still allowed. So there you go.
I guess if you have enough money, you can probably find an attorney who will sponsor you.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Or enough Bitcoin.
Or enough, right. Or Ethereum or Cardano.
See, tying it all together.
So proof of stake is the future, I think. I think that the cryptos that are going to have the most impact are ones that are solving problems and are using some form of proof of stake system. I want to stress that all the proof of stake systems are all a little bit different.
Yeah.
They all work a little bit differently. And I'm just the most familiar with Cardano. It's the one that I like the most. I know the most about it, which is great. And from an energy standpoint, proof of work is pure poison, in my opinion. Like, when we've seen how proof of work works, and its potential for energy consumption is just too high, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and we're seeing that every day.
We're seeing that every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. But Bitcoin's the one everybody knows. The Bitcoin is the one everybody trusts.
Right.
I'm not saying trust a cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is the one. It's the name brand.
It is the name brand. And I'm not saying that Bitcoin is going away.
Right.
I'm just saying that the emerging cryptos that are competing with Bitcoin, or maybe even competing alongside Bitcoin because they do different things, the ones that stand the most chance of having a successful future, in my opinion, are the ones that are based on a proof of stake system.
Yeah, that makes sense. It totally makes sense. Yep. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on to talk about this. I know that there are a lot of people who do have questions about it, and hopefully we cleared up some of those questions. If you have questions, you are welcome, please, to shoot me a note at acm@macobserver.com, or again, you can go over to macobserver.com/contextmachine. Let's see here. First of all, let me play this, Dave. And I'm going to point out that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, contact me at the aforementioned addresses. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Our sponsor this week was Molecule. And remember, for a limited time, you can save up to $120 on Molecule air purifiers by visiting molecule.com. And remember, that's MOLEKULE.com. And using promo code ACM for this very show. And then you can also enjoy free shipping and a 30-day at-home trial on your order. And remember, that's acm@molecule.com. Dave, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This was enlightening, truly. Hopefully it's enlightening for somebody else listening.
Yeah, I hope so. And on that note...